Hello and welcome to The Deep Dive. Today we have a special return guest and a dear friend of mine. So we'll be exploring the games that shaped Rob Logan. Hi, Rob.
Hi.
Hi. So without further ado, let's descend. Well, that was pretty cool. Sorry, I know I just kind of like ruined it by coming right in, but we're testing out the new Roadcaster right now, which means that I played that theme song, we did the intro, and like we faded it, and none of it was post. This is all live.
This is all happening right now. Oh, we're including
all this. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Like, why not? I feel like that was super cool. I mean, it was a little clunky, but
so
it was my first time.
Season 2 is a little more loose.
Yeah, yeah. Lol. But yes, so hello, everybody. Welcome to season 2 of The Deep Dive. Rob is currently visiting me right now for a couple of days, and we have been in a podcast haze today.
Yes.
We're in our pajamas. It's great. We've just been sitting here with the Roadcaster. We recorded an episode of IMD Babble. For if you don't know who Rob is by this point, he's been on, what, 2-3 episodes?
This would be third.
This is third? Okay. Yeah, so 2 episodes of season 1 of Deep Dive, and here he is again to do another episode with me. But yeah, we've been doing crossovers, podcast day, and I think we're going to record another 2 episodes of something today.
We have so many plans.
We have so much planned. So yeah, we're just in a recording haze today, and it's great. So thank you, Rob, for coming on the Deep Dive.
Happy to be here yet again.
Oh my God, and you're in person, and we're looking at each other in our eyeballs, guys. It's so cool. It's so
eyeballs.
Great. I know. It's way better doing podcasts in person.
It really
so
is.
So I'm definitely going to see if I can squeeze more of that in for the Deep Dive season 2. Except I have like a guest list already in my head for season 2, people who've already said yes, and I think they'll be great, and the episodes will be wonderful. So
they have to all commit to traveling.
Yeah, yeah. If I could afford to fly them all here, I totally would.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get down to the point of the episode, which is talk about the games that shaped you, Rob.
Yeah.
Logan.
So I listened to the games that shaped Captain, the games that shaped you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like yours were very much about like informing you as a person.
Yep.
Whereas I don't know if games have necessarily, maybe they have in ways that I haven't realized.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they've necessarily shaped me the way that other forms of media have. But there
like
are
films,
certainly
you mean?
Right,
like
sure.
Films have shaped you. Yeah.
But there are games that have absolutely informed and shaped my gaming self.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah,
let's talk about that, because I know that you didn't really play super emotional or narrative games growing
Not
up.
Not really.
Right?
No.
Yeah. So that's probably why they didn't shape you as a person.
Exist
yeah.
As much.
Well.
Okay. So some of them did. Some of them didn't.
Yeah.
I know. Like early on, like there. Are you familiar with the comedian Camille Nanjiani?
I am not.
He does a bit about like early video games, specifically mm-hmm. about the game like Heavy Rain as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he compares it to like when we had video games growing up, you would have like a dot on the screen.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you would have the video game manual that had like this entire backstory written out.
Yes.
That you could not portray with a dot on the screen.
Yeah, in an actual dot on the screen.
And then we evolved to a place where we're playing like Heavy Rain and you're making a microwave dinner so a kid doesn't feel bad about the fact that his mom doesn't live there anymore. And it's Aww. Like compared to a dot on the screen.
Yeah.
So it's just been
I feel
huge.
Like they just had to work harder back
yeah.
then, you know, to make sure the narrative translated even with not so great graphics. But yep. I feel like because great graphics didn't really exist, mm-hmm. people were way more willing to just let the narrative come through and
sure.
suspend their disbelief as far
sure.
as the graphics went. So I feel like there were really good narrative games. I just maybe didn't know about them. And I would like to maybe explore that. Like Captain, co-host of the show, usually does that on his stream. He will very frequently play old games. They're my favorite streams of yours, Cap, when you're listening to this, just so you know, where he'll do that. He'll play old games from the 90s or something like that. And I'm like, I didn't know this existed. And this
yeah.
is great. Like, or this is terrible, but also I can't stop watching, you know, like it's, yeah, it's real good.
There's certainly a genre of games that I went through that were all narrative
mm-hmm.
early on that remain my favorite, like one of my favorite types of games.
Yeah.
Although, and I think you know this, mm-hmm. largely my favorite type of game is like a platformer.
Yes,
like
I
a
did
2D
know that about
platformer.
You. I
love those. And the biggest ones, I mean, obviously I played like the Super Mario
yeah.
and all the things like that. But the franchise that really got me early on were the Mega Man games.
Yes.
And
let's talk about Mega Man.
I love the Mega Man games because not so much because they're brutally challenging at mm-hmm. times. And I actually prefer a game now that's a little more forgiving. In the sense that, like, if you die three times in Mega Man, you start that entire yeah. level over, having gained nothing yeah. except the knowledge of what that level's like.
Yeah.
So you retain, like, your mastery comes from the repetition.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, I kind of understand why people like some of the Dark Souls stuff, because yeah. it's learning. And I love the process of learning the pattern of a boss.
Yeah, and like knowing kind of their yeah, moves.
And I feel like I'm hacking the Matrix.
Yeah, it makes you feel like an actual master of the
yes,
art yeah
exactly.
that you've learned.
So
yeah,
I love that sure. idea. I love and because of Mega Man, it has trained me mm-hmm. to look for that in like every game I play, which is also part of the problem with enjoying narrative games, is because I'm dissecting every game that I'm playing as I'm playing it.
Yeah, you also like things to move at a particular pace.
I do.
Yes I know that about you.
Although so. I would never speed run a Mega Man game.
I find that interesting. I don't think you don't strike me as a speedrunner.
I don't enjoy speedrunning.
Yeah, no. You do like games to be at a certain speed. So yeah. sometimes narrative, especially narrative point and click, mm-hmm. I feel like you're just kind of like, okay, when's
and
the next
yet,
thing happening?
And yet, if I jump ahead from like Mega Man to what was like kind of the height of my early gaming
mm-hmm.
is the LucasArts point and click adventure games. I
like
love
Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Oh my God.
But I had the
did
same problem.
It?
I had the same problem that
you had
did.
The same bug.
With
okay.
Indiana Jones,
oh my
Fate
God.
Of Atlantis.
Okay.
Is I played the entire game.
Yeah.
And I got to a certain point and yeah. I knew it was like the end because
oh.
I had one friend in high school who had like yeah. played all these games too. And every day, this is all we talked
yeah,
about.
Yeah, of course.
And because we weren't just looking it up on the internet.
Yeah,
wasn't
because
as
it wasn't a thing.
That.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing back then, guys. I'm telling you.
I
you
couldn't
just
hop
couldn't
on
just
YouTube.
Google it. Yeah.
But I would talk to him like we'd all
like Google didn't even exist.
We'd come in the next day and be like, where are you at? Where are you at?
Yeah.
Oh, how do I get by? Like, I can't. I've been doing this for hours and I yeah. can't figure out the solution to this one puzzle. Like, oh, you got to do this. Oh,
yeah.
That's stupid. Yeah, it is stupid. But you would just keep going anyway. So we would come in every day and kind of compare our notes and check in. And it's how we got through a lot
yeah.
of those games. But Fate of Atlantis, I got to the end and I hit a bug. And I couldn't.
And you couldn't.
I just continue. Couldn't complete the game. I knew exactly what I had to do.
But
the
it
game just would not let me do it.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
So same thing. Something similar happened to me, but I don't think I was near the end. I think
okay.
I was still at the beginning. But years later, when it the internet came out,
yeah,
or at least gaming on the internet and forums like that existed, where people talked about that, it was then commonly known that it was a bug, and I was so frustrated. I just remember thinking, okay, I am going to play this one day.
Yeah.
Maybe season two, I will do this of Deep Dive. I will play this game. So let's talk about, so Mega Man was the first one that shaped your gaming. In what way did it shape how you are as a gamer, other than you look for that certain aspect of difficulty? And
I think one of the things I liked about it is that it was mastering a small set of controls instead of mastering like this,
like a bunch of combos
yeah.
for fighting games and stuff.
Yeah, it's okay. like these are the mechanics.
Yeah,
here they are. The
become an expert.
The worlds and the enemies will evolve as you're going.
Yeah,
but you do what you do, so get good at what you do.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
I like that kind of lesson too.
Right.
Not that I'm digging into Mega Man, but that's what Deep Dive is.
Yeah, we have skill sets, and sure, yeah. our skill sets evolve too. And yeah, Mega Man earns new weapons. And
yeah.
I do like that kind of Metroidvania idea
mm-hmm.
of like, you need this thing to get in this area. I didn't mind in Mega Man because the levels were so quick. And if you think about like the playtime of a Mega Man game, it's not
yeah.
crazy long.
Yeah.
Like there's usually 8 levels or so, and then the boss levels, and that's the whole game. So if you get certain weapons and you want to replay a level and get to different areas because you now have this new weapon, it's not like this crazy amount of time that you're devoting
yeah.
to replay a level.
Yeah.
But
do you think that as you got older, your value of time changed?
Absolutely.
So that's why you don't really, you're looking for more forgiving games now because you don't want to have to go back and replay that?
I think that's yeah. a lot of it. Yeah. yeah. And it's even why I look at certain RPGs that I'm interested in
yeah.
and I just haven't touched them yet
yeah.
because I know the time commitment involved. And I'm like, I don't want that.
Man,
I want
too.
Something I can eat in like 8 hours tops.
Yeah. Now, has streaming changed that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because now I don't feel like I'm wasting time anymore.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm so glad that you brought that up.
Though. Yeah. There are absolutely exceptions to that. And I've played some games recently that I was like, oh my God, this reminded me why I love gaming.
Yeah.
Because I did it off stream and I did it just for me.
Yeah.
And I really just got to sit down and digest the game.
I feel like that's my line. I used to play exclusively JRPGs almost, especially when I was like, you know, a young teen or in high school or whatever. And then now I just find that time commitment, man. I'll look at a game and go, that looks very interesting, but I just don't know if I can commit 60 hours to a game. And I know how I am. And I know that I love every side quest. And I know I want to complete all the things and get all the juicy lore and the backstory. And I just don't know if I want to commit the time to one particular story. So I find that interesting.
And that's part of my problem, too, is because people are like, oh, just go in and play the main story. And then I'm like,
oh, God, I can't.
I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you can't. I feel like that's doing a disservice to the game.
Yeah.
Especially if a game is like The Witcher, for example. Mm-hmm. People are like, you need to play this. And I say to myself, yeah, if I had a week of just vacation by myself, I'm sure that that would be something that I would love to play. But because I only stream for about 4 hours a day and I don't want it to be 4 months of The Witcher, I'm not going to probably do that. I'm not probably going to play it, even though I know I would love it. It just doesn't seem to fit into my stream time. And therefore, it's probably not going to fit into my schedule at this point. Yeah.
I also like a game where I can be overpowered.
Oh, interesting.
So when I'm playing...
Ooh. I knew I was going to dive into that juicy. Let's do it.
That couldn't scream more me anyway, but that fits my personality perfectly. But there's like if I play any game where it allows me to like grind and level up and do side missions first.
Yeah.
And the enemies don't. I don't like a game where the enemies level up with me because what's the point?
Like
if they level up with me, then why am I grinding to get my experience up? Why not just try to kill everything at the lowest possible thing because they're all easier.
Like in Final Fantasy VIII, where the key is actually not leveling yourself up. And then you can dominate. The way the mechanics are in almost every other Final Fantasy game, you grind until you're like level 100 and then you can slaughter everything. But really, you get way better if you don't level up in Final Fantasy VIII.
See, that would drive me mental.
It's like a hidden mechanic.
That would make me mental.
Yeah.
Like, I will do the side missions first for two reasons. Mm-hmm. One, I want to be OP during the main storyline.
I want to be OP. I love
that. And two, I'm leaving my dessert for the end.
Yeah.
I know the side missions are going to be the more monotonous and the things that I'm not going to like sink my teeth into as much.
You do like
and
your
as
dessert.
Soon as I do, as soon as the main story's over, I'm like, okay, I'm done with the story.
Yeah.
Why would I keep playing?
Hmm.
So if I haven't completed the side missions, my motivation to do so after completing the main story isn't there as much. So I want to do all that for my completionist self and then dive into the main story. And I'll do the little things along the way for the main story that I have to unlock all the side missions that I need.
Aren't you worried that the side missions might spoil anything in the main story? Or
they never really have.
Really
the only thing that tends to happen to me is that I will encounter enemies and not know how to beat them yet, that the main story would have taught me how to.
Okay.
But I kind of enjoy figuring it out on my own anyway.
Yeah, I do too. I like that.
I don't mind
as well. Do you find that your approach to gaming is also your approach to life and work? Like, I feel
like I do the side missions.
You do
and
the side
the...
missions and you, I feel like you try to level up. I love you. We can cut this out if you
it's
want.
It's fine. Go ahead.
But like, I feel like just in the short time that I have known you, I do feel like you grind a lot in your side missions in life so that you can destroy what your main goal or your main focus is. And I find it interesting that you describe, I want to be OP and I want to be like overpowered because you do that.
I want to be a superhero.
You do. You want to be a superhero.
It's not even an exaggeration. Like if I had powers tomorrow, I'd be the happiest person on the planet.
Yeah. You want to be
and I would start fighting crime. Like some people are like, I'd be a villain. Not me.
Yeah.
I know I would fight crime.
Yeah. Literally born to be Batman. But yeah, like just even with the podcast and the podcast editing, and you know, I don't know if you guys follow Rob on social media, but you absolutely should. But he's been working on growing a podcast network, and what I've seen him do, like he also edits the shows, him and Captain Howdy and myself, but mostly Rob at this point, edit the deep dive for us. And he's taken on that editing and then a couple other podcasts, right, that you've begun editing. And he's just really taken a dive right into podcast editing. But I feel like that's a fucking side quest to what you really want to do, which is the, you know, podcasting yourself and, you know, growing that.
And that's fine. I do look at a lot of that as a means to an end, but I like a means that feeds my ends.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't do necessarily something that's not a part of my end goal if I don't have to. Like, my main job is the thing that I'm trying to cut out.
Yeah.
And I'm grinding all the side missions so that I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like you do that and you do give 110% and you figure out what your skill set is and then you hone that skill set until you can. Yeah,
but I also have the problem of wanting the ultimate skill set.
Yeah.
So instead of delegating.
Yes.
I take the time to learn when I shouldn't.
I know. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
It's real bad.
Yeah.
I should just, well, actually, you'd be proud of me. And maybe you are. And those listening probably don't know how big of a deal it was for me to actually hand over the editing.
I was going to say, because you have started to delegate.
I have started. And it was, it took a lot for me to remove myself from editing of the podcast. But during season one, if I wanted the episodes to come out on time, I had to do it.
And you even pitched it that way to me. The first thing was not, hey, can you, I want to start hiring you. Like, okay. I'm at that point.
I'm at that point where you told me, like, you know, I'm at that point and I have to relinquish control. Yep. If I want it to be good and I want it to come out on time, I have to just relinquish the control. And Rob and I actually talk a lot about being control freaks and hard workers and things like that. So we bond a lot over that. So he was so kind when I approached him and I said, you know, I'm at the point where I need to help and I trust you. Like, I know you have 8 years plus 9 years now of experience in podcasting and I don't want to add more to your plate, but also let me just throw money at you and please help
me. It's a means to an end for me. Win-win.
Yeah, it was good. So anyway, back to gaming and how it's shaped you. So after Mega Man, you said you played platformers are your first love.
They are.
Was there what came after to bring, you know, that was not a platformer that I feel like changed
the first game I remember that took me away from platformers and into the point and click genre was Day of the Tentacle.
I have never heard of this.
It is the sequel to Maniac Mansion.
I've never heard of that either.
Really?
Really.
Interesting. Okay, so
was Maniac, it a PC game?
Yeah, that's why. Okay. Yeah, I was on PC at first. Yeah. Well, okay, so I started off with an Atari 2600.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was my first one. And I still have my ET cartridge and stuff.
I remember, we were just talking about that last night.
The other night. So I have a lot of those. I don't have my Atari anymore, but I have a lot of those games. Mm-hmm. And I played a lot of them with my brother and sister. So gaming was always a community thing for me. It wasn't an individual thing as much. But it became one as I got older and everyone got busier and all that stuff. Then I got an NES. And I got the NES that included the light gun and Rob the Robot.
Oh, I've heard of Rob the Robot.
Yeah.
Everybody talks about Rob the Robot. You know, I didn't know Rob the Robot existed.
So I immediately gravitated towards Rob the Robot for obvious reasons.
Your name is Rob.
It stood for Robotic Operating Buddy.
Cute.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Rob, your name now. Oh my God.
So I'm a Robbot. It was a great idea, but the problem with Rob the Robot is it only worked with two games on the Nintendo.
So they had
this entire peripheral for two games, one of which it came with. So you would only have to buy the other and then you had the entire set.
Oh, that sucks.
It was weird. So what it did was it looked at the TV screen. It wouldn't work on our TVs now because it needed the CRT, like certain blinks on it, just like the light gun doesn't work on our TVs.
Okay.
So you would pause the game and the game is Gyromite. That's the one it came with. The other one was called Stack Up. Okay. Those were the only two. I didn't have Stack Up. I only put Gyromite. So Gyromite, you would pause the game and it would do a flash on the screen
and give you
that Rob would recognize.
Oh, okay.
His eyeballs would pick up on that flash and be awaiting an input now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So then depending on what button I hit on my controller, it would do a different flash, which would command Rob what to do. And all Rob could do is pick up spinning gyros and put them on platforms. That's all it could do.
In the game.
In real life.
In real life.
Yeah. So he had a little tray on the side and there was a spinner, a battery powered spinner that you would put these.
Spinner?
Kind of.
Okay.
You'd put these metal gyros into them.
Okay.
And it had a spinning metal disc on it.
Okay.
Or like Beyblades. Rob would go and pick them up with his hands, pick them up, move them over, and
he's
put
gesturing
them,
right now.
Yeah, and put them on a platform, and the gyros would continue to spin on that platform.
Oh.
Those platforms were attached to like little plastic pushers, where there would be another NES controller, and it would either push in the A button or push in the B button and hold them down.
Wow.
That was the entire function, just to hold in a button. So, like, if you had a friend, none of this is necessary. They could just hold in A or B, but instead you're spending 5 minutes giving Rob different commands.
Trying to get Rob to do it.
Okay. So in theory, fun.
I mean, he has a small set of skills that he needs to master.
Right.
Come on, Rob.
But on the other hand, I'd be like, brother.
Yeah, like somebody else come and play.
I require your assistance.
So it's one of those toys that was very exciting for 5 minutes, and then it was too much work.
Yeah.
That's
Then after NES, I started getting into computer gaming.
Yeah, okay.
And
can I ask, how old were you when that happened?
Oh, man.
I feel like this is pertinent.
Just
a general age.
Probably around.
You don't remember.
10 or 11.
Okay, yeah. I find, yeah. All right. This is interesting then.
And
okay.
A friend of mine in elementary school, I would go over his house and we would play Commodore 64 games.
Okay.
Like a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved video games like early on, especially out of like my brother and my sister.
Yeah.
Like I was the tech gaming guy. So then when I started playing, I think the LucasArts games were like in high school. So I was playing like things here and there. It was mostly console until high school.
Until high school.
I think that's really when the PC stuff came on. So Day of the Tentacle was and Maniac Mansion. Maniac Mansion was not a point and click. It was one of those games where you had to type in.
Okay.
But it wasn't text-based. It was still graphics.
Okay.
But you would have a list of words that you could click on to do certain actions.
And did you have to type the word?
No.
Oh,
no. It was weird. And it was, I never liked that interface. It was very clunky.
Yeah.
But then
that's
when they made.
I learned to type.
Really?
Was that Mario typing game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I can type without looking.
Yep.
Yep. It's great.
And
loved
then,
it.
When they made the sequel, it was just a point and click.
Oh, okay.
Like it didn't have that.
So they
word
took
system.
That clunky mechanic out. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
but
nice.
But because they were a good sequel, they actually embedded the original Maniac Mansion in a computer inside that world.
That's super cool.
So you
cool.
can still go and
so
play the
and
entire
play
game.
That's awesome.
I love it
when they do that. Yeah, yeah, I do. I do too.
But Day of the Tentacle was.
Wait, hold on. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. There's another game that did that and I can't remember what it was. Oh, it was. Did you ever? No, you didn't because this is a horror game. It's a free horror game. I can't remember what it's called. It's like Spooky's Mansion or something like that. Hold on. I mean, I have to look it up because I'm super curious. And they do that where there's an entire game.
I feel like they've done that a few times over the course of gaming as a whole.
It's Spooky's Mansion of jump scares.
Oh. Yep.
Spooky's Jump Scare Mansion. It's a free game that for some reason I find incredibly terrifying.
Okay.
It's like maybe 6 colors in the entire game. It's like, yeah, but it's still really scary.
Wow.
Yeah, but there's a console in there where you can go in and you play, and it's just a murder game that you play. It's a whole other game inside of a game.
Yeah.
I love that shit.
Yeah. No, okay. I love it.
Anyway,
so
sorry. Please continue.
So the premise is based, it's a ridiculous premise, but it's comedic.
Yeah.
And I love the comedic adventure game. So these tentacles, like literally tentacle creatures, come and like drink out of a polluted river and they grow arms, like little stubby arms.
Gosh.
And that's their evolution. They're like, now we can conquer the world. It's ridiculous.
Oh my gosh.
It's
I
so
want to play
ridiculous.
This game. This sounds amazing.
You end up taking these three friends, Bernard, Hoagie, and is it Laverne? I think it's Laverne. And each of them goes to a different time period to try and stop the tentacles from ever getting to that point of evolving.
Okay.
So one of you is operating in the present. One of you is operating in the past around like Declaration of Independence time. So you meet like George Washington and all that stuff.
What?
And then another one of you is in the future where the tentacles have taken over and humans are like pets.
Okay, stop. I'm super into this.
But then
the
times
tentacle?
Affect each other.
Okay,
as you're playing.
This is my kind of game. What the? All right.
There's
I'm
a remastered one out there now that came out a few years ago.
Okay.
So you can play Day of the Tentacle Remastered.
I'm going to add that to my list.
It's amazing.
I'm
it's
sure there are a lot of listeners
such a,
who are
it's
very
probably,
thankful.
Honestly, I did a full playthrough. I think it took me 4 hours. Like you could do it in one stream.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'll add it to my list and maybe
super
we will deep
fun.
Dive about it.
Super fun.
Cool.
That was the first one, but then I played other games like Sam and Max, Indiana Jones.
Yep, Indiana Jones.
Sam and Max Hit the Road is great, and I loved all the stuff. They've come out with like episodic stuff since. Sam and Max is like a dog who's a cop.
Yeah.
And Max, who's this like little hyper bunny who's just like offensive.
What did you love about that?
I love the comedy.
You love the
comedy.
Again,
yeah. And the world of just like. The LucasArts ones that were comedy based, I loved a lot, and I really got attached to the characters.
Do you know the game that came out around that time about the guy on his motorcycle?
Full Throttle.
Full Throttle.
That's, your husband and I were talking about it the other night because we both love
it. His, it's one of his favorites.
It's one of my favorite games. Yeah. I was going to get to it. Yeah. And out of all of them. Yeah, okay. No. Yeah, out of all of them, that's the one I love the most.
It's the Full Throttle one?
Yes.
Okay. So I need to also play that one too.
It's a great game. Yeah. But, and again, you can do that in one stream. Yeah. Probably.
Okay. Interesting. But,
and that's not as heavy comedy. Mm-hmm. That was more like, oh, I'm a cool biker.
Yeah.
Like, it made me feel cool.
Yeah.
And the voice acting is incredible. Like Mark Hamill is one of the main villains.
That's what I heard. Yeah. He's in there too.
Yeah. So he does a lot of LucasArts stuff, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's Mark Hamill and LucasArts.
Yeah.
And there was that, and there was The Dig, which was the other game I was telling you about the other night, like sci-fi alien world stuff.
That's also already on my list. Yes. So now I will bump it to the top. Maybe like next week, I'll just do like the week of Rob's favorite games and I go through those. But so at what point did you realize, because it sounds to me like you went from, because Mega Man did have a story.
It did, but it was but loose.
It was very
and
loose.
And it was every game was the same story. Yeah.
But I feel like you started playing stuff that had more of a story. So at what point did you realize that games could be like that? Was it with the Indiana Jones or?
I think it was like with Day of the Tentacle that I was like, oh man, this is, I've always been so gameplay focused. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy a game that I just enjoy playing.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to grab me with a great story. If I like going through it and the process of doing everything is fun and relaxing and enjoyable.
Absolutely.
That's all I need. But if you throw a good story on top of that, boom, next level.
Yeah.
But I never thought that that was something I needed until they gave it to me.
Yeah.
So then you give me the point and clicks where I'm like, okay, I don't feel like I'm necessarily doing as much.
Yeah.
And I'm still seeing like cutscenes. Mm-hmm. Like we're getting longer cutscenes now. But like, okay, now I'm getting invested in the story. So then when you started giving me things that had like a little bit of both and you get those like third person action adventure games like the Uncharted and stuff like that. And then when my mind starts getting blown because now it's best of both worlds.
Yeah. And you are a huge movie junkie. So you love stories. You love
a cinematic game. And give me a photo mode and I'll live there forever.
Right. Me too. Surprise.
Yeah.
So, okay, so then what was the first one where did you ever have a game where you sat back and were like, holy shit, this is like a playable movie, and it just blew you away?
Man, that's tough. So one of the games that, I don't know like where the first one would be.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be the first, but what comes to mind, I guess?
I don't know if they really came out on the computer. Like the stories were
all
still.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, we weren't really getting that. The graphics weren't there.
Yeah.
It was consoles that kind of attacked that first.
Yeah, I think so too. Because Final Fantasy VII did have a PC version, so you could play that. And those games that had the story were there, but I do agree with you that I feel like on PlayStation at least is where you got the more adult or more mature stories plus action first. Yep.
And I didn't get back into consoles until college.
Yeah.
So it was a while where I was just a PC gamer. Like I was playing Duke Nukem and Command and Conquer Red Alert with my buddies over the modems.
Yes, I remember Red Alert. I remember Red Alert.
And then in college when we were living in our like suite setup and it was a sweet setup, and it was also a sweet setup, the homophones. So I would walk by my the other people's rooms, and there's people playing like skateboarding games and wrestling and like, I just realized something that I've said before, and it is an actual thing that got shaped for me by a video game that's not just shaping video gaming. Tony Hawk was one of the games that kind of got me back into console gaming.
Okay, let's talk about
that. The original Tony Hawk. And that was just, again, back to that community experience. Mm-hmm. Like, we were all sitting in a room, even though one person was playing.
Yeah, yep.
We're all watching that one person playing going and handing the control around going, who's going to beat that score?
Yeah, that's very cool.
I love that environment.
Did you ever do, like, skateboarding or anything like that?
I always liked skateboarding culture. Like, I still wear Vans.
Yeah.
I like the look of it, but I was never, like, skateboarder myself.
It's funny how just a communal game for something maybe you might not be interested in can shape you in such a way. I had a similar experience with the Silent Hill games where we would all sit down and play them together. So
see, I would watch my friends play horror games, and I watched one of my friends play, even though I don't like horror games, I watched one of my friends play Silent Hill 2. But we like only for like one session.
Yeah.
I didn't see that much of it. Then I went home and I read an entire.
Yeah.
I read the entire story.
This, yeah.
Because I love the story and it's so good. But I would never want to watch that entire game. This is gross.
I think one of the best one of the best compliments I've ever gotten about the Deep Dive show is from you when you were like, I listened to the Silent Hill 2 and it makes me want to play Silent Hill 2.
Yes.
And I was like, that is a huge deal because you hate horror games. And
I love the dissection of it because I do love that story. Yeah. It's done so
it
well.
It is done really well.
Yeah. Yep. But the other game they were playing, aside from Tony Hawk, mm-hmm. and this is where we're getting into life shaping things.
Yes.
Is WWE SmackDown.
I didn't know this about you. Please tell everyone.
Okay, so.
Because I know what you're about to say now.
When I was growing up, I was not allowed to watch wrestling.
Right, neither was I.
I would sneak it once in a while at my neighbor's house, who's a big wrestling fan.
Yeah.
So I knew like a couple of the characters and stuff, but nothing really.
Right.
And it wasn't until my freshman year of college that I even learned about modern wrestlers and was like, I saw Rock do like a leg drop and I thought he was doing the rock bottom. And I'd be like, I thought I knew everything about wrestling. I was like, oh, rock bottom. And everyone's like, you're an idiot. That's not the rock bottom. I was clueless.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about wrestling, really.
Did you want to? Was it like something that you were always interested in or was it just
a little
like,
bit? Although in high school, I was like, oh, that's dumb. Why would I watch that? And that's, I saw other people kind of like getting into it and I wasn't like super, it didn't.
Because you'd never
in.
Seen it. You were just kind of like, okay.
But then the more I looked into it, like that game got me looking into wrestling.
Yeah.
And then we started watching wrestling as a group.
Oh,
and then I started hosting pay-per-view parties. And again, I became the front runner.
Yeah.
And then because of geek personality, you put this thing in front of me that I'm interested in. And I go, more. And I just consumed so much of it. And then by the time, like my sophomore year already, I'm like, I want to be a wrestler.
That's insane. That's wonderful.
And then 2 years
I can't
after
believe
that,
I was like, how, games that have shaped you. And you're like, I don't know if I have any games that shaped my life, but there's absolutely a major one.
And I kept playing all the SmackDown games as they were coming out. We all played them as a group. We would all make our personas as wrestlers and we would run our own little eFed.
Did your persona that you made up, did you end up using it?
I did.
Oh, cool. That is super cool. So let's pause for a second and tell everybody, because I'm sure people gather what's happening now. But if you did not know, Rob was a pro wrestler for how long?
7 years.
7 years. So this is definitely a game that shaped him in a pretty profound way. So
when I actually, the deal was, and my parents weren't thrilled about it at first.
Yeah, of course.
And they were like,
it can be seen as dangerous, right? Yeah, absolutely.
So when I got to the point of graduating, they were like, please just graduate first.
Yes.
So that you can do, and then whatever you want to do with your life, fine, but you have a fallback.
Yeah.
That's the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
So I graduated. I found a school in like the next state over from me to train in. I trained for like 6 months before they would let me on a show.
Yep.
And then I did a show. It wasn't the first persona I used. I was Rob Impact at first.
Cool.
And that was something based on my voice.
Yeah.
Because whenever my trainer would say the word impact, I would always go impact just behind him. And he was like, that's your name.
Yeah. No, that's it.
So I had other name ideas, but that's the one that he was like, you're right. So I was Rob Impact for probably most of my wrestling run. And then at the very end of it, I was like, I'm so generic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really me. I feel like I'm just this guy named Rob Impact. And then I really wanted to be a character.
Tell you right now, you're not generic. But yes, go on.
I wanted to be an actual character. Something that pulled me out of myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even more so.
Of course, like part of performing. And that's it, right? I think most people don't really realize that wrestling is an art. It's a performing.
Yep.
It's a dance with your partner just as much as stage combat is or anything else. So yeah, of course you want to be not you for a couple of hours. You know, that's the whole point.
So I, and actually you could say that my character evolved because of the video game.
Yes.
Because in the game is known now for its create a wrestler feature, which is super advanced and you can do crazy things. But at the beginning, it was literally picking parts of other wrestlers to like mesh them into one.
Into a new.
And my two favorite wrestlers at the time were Kane, who's this like big monster guy with like a mask with slashes and fire. And he was Undertaker's brother.
Wow. Okay.
And he's this big monstrous character, black and red color scheme, which are my colors.
I love how animated you get when you talk about wrestling. It's the same as when you talk about cooking.
That's true. And I don't even watch wrestling anymore, which is the craziest thing.
Yeah. But this is really cool sitting here in person and watching you get animated. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
And my other wrestler, my favorite wrestler at the time was Jeff Hardy, who was like a high flying daredevil.
Type guy.
He's the opposite of Kane.
Yeah.
So I mashed these two guys together.
So
I literally had like Kane's head and like Jeff Hardy's armbands and like.
what about them did you find so appealing?
Kane is a dark superhero.
Yeah, which you
That's
like.
What I liked about yeah. him, mm-hmm. even though he was mostly a bad guy yeah. most of the time. Yeah. But I liked his whole aesthetic, yeah. really. And then Jeff Hardy I liked because he wasn't the bigger guy.
Yeah.
But he would do crazy stuff to win.
Cool.
So he would be the guy jumping off the 20-foot ladder.
He's the guy who took his skill set and mastered it,
yes.
if I may say so. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
And his nickname over time became the Charismatic Enigma. Hmm. Like, he's an artsy guy. Cool. He would always paint his face up and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was one of those guys, too, where you would just watch his mannerisms. Mm-hmm. And they were, like, hypnotic. Like, he has a natural charisma.
Yeah.
So
I love when people use that to describe
yeah.
certain individuals.
So there was something just, like, cool about him already. Mm-hmm. And he had, like, kind of a... They wore, like, instead of, like, traditional wrestling clothes,
yeah.
they wore crap out of, like, Hot Topic. Like, oh, he wow. had okay. black baggy cargo pants.
And he would still fight in those?
Like, nylons that were cut up as
yeah,
armbands.
Yeah, okay, I remember seeing that.
Did it
yeah,
as the
I
Hardy
remember
Boys.
Seeing that. Okay.
Yeah. So, and he was crazy. He would do mm-hmm. all this death-defying stuff. So, those were the characters I merged together when I built my character.
Yeah.
And then that started to evolve from game to game as they increased or improved the creative wrestler option.
Cool.
And I was able to start putting in custom stuff. So then by the time I had my mask made,
yeah.
like I got an actual mask made for Berserker
yeah.
or the Night Angel. So he had like a moniker, the Night Angel Berserker. Berserker was an old nickname for like it was my gaming name
yeah.
that I used for years, even before I started liking wrestling. And then it became my persona.
Mm-hmm.
And even that kind of fell away and it became the Night Angel after a while.
That's super cool.
But the mask I had made was made by the same guy who made Kane's mask.
What?
So one of the inspirations, he made his, that mask inspired me. So I asked him to make me a mask and I got, and it cost like $300
yeah.
and I didn't give a crap.
You were like,
I was
yeah.
like, the guy who's making Kane, who made Kane's mask
is making mine. And that's super cool.
So I did that and I had black pants that didn't yeah. have the pockets on them.
Yeah.
But that was a little nod to Jeff Hardy. I wore armbands that went left partway. I didn't want to just rip people
yeah,
off.
Yeah, of course. And but you like, wanted to wink at them,
yes.
which I know you love when people do that in films.
Yeah.
When they wink at other films.
And then the slashes are similar to Kane, but I actually pulled it from the cartoon Gargoyles.
I loved Gargoyles.
You know, the character of the hunter.
I can't remember. It's been
it's
so
actually
long.
Macbeth.
My memory is
they
terrible.
End up revealing in
oh,
the
wow.
show.
Oh,
but
wow.
if the hunter would be a gargoyle hunter and he
yeah.
would just and they would pass the mantle over time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a black hood with three red slashes across
oh.
the face because the original hunter, Damona, slashed him and he had those scars. And I loved the look of that.
Yeah, of course.
And I took that and put that onto my mask.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So it's a mesh of a lot of different things. But then I started using like. For a while, my finisher was Jeff Hardy's finisher, like
yeah.
jumping off the top rope and doing a flip and all that stuff.
Yeah. That's insane. Like, just imagining you jumping off and like pro wrestling and almost pretending.
So if there was any
someone,
game that really influenced my actual
life is that
absolutely
one.
The SmackDown series.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you played SmackDown all the way through university. Did you play anything else that was anything else during that time?
Oh,
I imagine
yeah.
you were like,
oh, yeah.
See, this is what I find fascinating is that even though you were becoming a pro wrestler and doing all that, you still made time for games. Like, I feel like that's something most gamers have in common. They
yeah.
will always find time to play a game.
Yeah. I mean, it fell away a little bit because
yeah.
I was devoting so much time to
yeah,
other
of course,
things.
Yeah.
But I was still finding time for that, for
yeah.
movies. Like, those are all the things that keep the fuel going.
Yeah. There's something about games that is not like any other medium.
Mm-hmm.
And I find when you sit down with a game, something happens. Like there's just, maybe it's your involvement in it. I'm not entirely sure, but I had a long stint away from gaming. And when I finally came back, I was like, why? Why did I ever stop?
Yeah.
It's like, I love this so much.
Yep.
So it's very, very interesting.
Yeah, it was the kind of community thing that brought me back into it. It was a way
yeah.
of connecting with people
yeah.
again. But then as I got older and out of college and everything, it kind of fell away a little
yeah.
bit because I was like, I want to play with people.
Yeah. So then what brought you back to it?
I started finding games that were enjoyable to play by myself and that mm-hmm. I could lose myself in, stuff like Kingdom Hearts. That
okay.
like now we're hitting the third person, like
yep.
good story and good gameplay
okay.
stuff, that kind of vibe.
Was Kingdom Hearts the first one, you think?
I don't know, actually. Mm. I mean, there's been quite a few. The Arkham series, obviously.
Yeah, of course, because Batman.
Yeah. The Uncharted games are unbelievable. I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan.
Yeah. So. I actually didn't know that about you.
Really?
I feel like I should have. I feel like that should have come up in conversation, and it must have. We must have mentioned it at some point, because I also love Indiana Jones.
I love the Uncharted games. Because they're cinematic as well.
I've been meaning to.
Oh, my God.
I figured I would like them, but I just haven't played them yet. Yeah. So.
If you like Indiana Jones and you like Tomb Raider, it's like smash.
I do like Tomb Raider, but I only played the first ones on the PlayStation. I never played the later ones. So I've been meaning to, because I do like that adventure type game.
Yeah.
But the only thing I ever did in Tomb Raider at one point, because it was a very difficult game, I think, and I didn't own it. Like it was one of the games I wasn't allowed to have. Mm-hmm. I think just because she was big breasted and scandally clad or something on the cover or something. So I probably wasn't allowed to have that one. But when I would go over to my cousin's house and he would let me play it, it was very difficult, and it was too difficult to get done in, you know, however long I was there visiting. Mm-hmm. So I would just like swan dive her off of her balcony, and like, cause she would break her neck if you did that. And so, and also if she jumped over the butler, he would fart. So I would do those things like nonstop for 20 minutes while I waited for my parents to stop talking. Yeah. and take us home, you know? Yeah. So random tidbit there about that, but now everybody's gonna go back and be like, does he really fart if you jump over him? I'm pretty sure he does. I'm pretty sure he toots when you somersault over him. Anyway,
generated memories.
So you played Kingdom Hearts, which I didn't realize you were a huge fan of Kingdom Hearts either.
I do. I love the Kingdom Hearts games. I don't necessarily understand what's happening in a lot of them.
Because you never played any Final Fantasy, right?
No. So I don't know any of those characters. Okay. And we had talked about before how anime I don't really connect with, because I feel there's something lost in the translation. There's something a little hollow in my opinion about it. And I feel the same way about Kingdom Hearts story. Mm-hmm. Like the whole time they're just harping on about like light and dark and heart. And a lot of the time it just feels crowbarred. Mm-hmm. But I love the Disney characters and I love the gameplay so much that I'm like, okay, that's a bad guy. I'm gonna go beat him up. Like that's all I care about.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I hear the hearts of the Kingdom Hearts fans all over listening that are breaking right
I'm
now.
I'm sure they are. And I've had people yell at me because I don't fully understand the story. And I'm like, that's fine. Even so, I'm still taking the time. So I got the recent collection that was the story so far.
Mm-hmm.
That includes 1 and 2 and all the other games leading up to 3. I had played 1 already and I replayed it fairly recently to where I'm like, I don't need to play it again. I'm replaying 2 right now because I had forgotten enough of it that it feels like I'm like, oh, that's familiar, but I don't necessarily remember.
Yeah, I don't. That's literally my life. Yeah. Games 2 years later and I'm like, what? Yeah. I don't know. I didn't play this game. And then someone will send me a link of a VOD of me playing it. I'm like, oh, I don't remember any of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And then I played Chain of Memories fairly recently as well. But then I have 5 more games to play. So I'm still committing to playing all of them before I go to 3, even though I've been told I can just go 1, 2, 3. And not worry about the other stuff.
But that's you.
But I enjoy the world
before the main quest.
And I enjoy the world itself. So
yeah,
I just like playing them.
That's interesting. Okay, so what about the world do you like then, other than Disney? Why did you pick up Kingdom Hearts? This is what I guess I want to know.
Sure.
If you didn't play Final Fantasy, because most of the people I know played Final Fantasy and were like, "What, Disney and Final Fantasy? Fuck that!" And they didn't want to play it. And then we all played it and we're like, "Actually, it's pretty good." So what drew you to that?
It was mostly the Disney angle, honestly.
It was the Disney angle. Interesting.
But I also enjoyed the idea of like this unknown avatar going in and being like, not a Mary Sue necessarily, but like part of that world.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I could kind of be like,
nice.
That's me in the Disney world.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty cool. Then after Kingdom Hearts, this is where it started, the cinematic. So you did Kingdom Hearts, you did Just Cause, you did
Just Cause.
Oh.
I haven't played any of those.
Oh, you just did Uncharted?
Uncharted.
Interesting. Did you ever play Prototype or Deus Ex?
I played the first Prototype.
Okay.
I've played, obviously, the Arkham games.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed.
Okay, yeah.
I played up through Assassin's Creed 3.
Yeah.
So I loved the Ezio story.
So did I. I feel like I left that out in my games that shaped me. Because I feel like when I played that, I feel like that started a series of games I really enjoyed. But yeah, I really enjoyed Assassin's Creed
and,
1.
And that's, and between like Kingdom Hearts and Assassin's Creed, that's when I'm like, okay, I'm getting into franchises.
Yes,
now.
Yes.
Like it, it had happened with Mega Man, but I wasn't like narrative invested.
Yes. And now,
yeah, and now I was. Invested.
And when did that start? Because I don't feel like that started until those games started coming out.
I think
out.
Assassin's Creed was a big proponent of it.
I do think so too. And it, and even though, even, you know, Just Cause and Prototype, those were, those all came out around the same time, I feel mm-hmm. like, or at least in my brain has rewritten that to be true. And I feel like it definitely started something because Deus Ex came out, and I know Deus Ex was a reinvention of an original, right?
There was a prior Deus Ex game, but it wasn't the same gameplay at all.
Yeah, no, it, they completely revamped it for
but
the better,
the case
from
with
what
Duke
I understand.
Nukem as well.
Yeah.
Duke Nukem was like a 2D side scroller, and then Duke Nukem 3D broke the mold. Yeah.
So I really appreciated those games coming out at such a time like that. I really, oh, and Devil May Cry was, came out around that time. You liked Devil May Cry?
I haven't played the original Devil May Cry. Oh. I played the reboot. I played DMC.
Yeah, okay.
I loved it.
Yeah. What? So wait, what's the reboot?
The reboot DMC? Was they came out with a game called DMC Devil May Cry.
Right.
And it was Dante, but he had like black hair.
What?
It was
fuck
very
off.
Different.
What are you doing?
It was very different, but then like when you went to a certain form, he got the white hair and everything.
Okay.
I enjoyed it a lot.
So wait,
but now they're doing Devil May Cry 5 and almost ignoring the reboot.
Good, because the reboot was fucking terrible. I didn't even play it, so I can't even say that. I just got mad. I was like, what
are
you doing?
I can understand, but as someone who never played the originals,
okay, but here,
I was fine
do
with
you
it.
Want to? I have them.
I totally would.
Okay.
I enjoy the gameplay.
Today,
sure.
When I am on my Darkfire episode, you need to play the original because it's like a platformer, but not, but it's super fucking difficult and you'll love it.
That's fine because I know how fast and frantic
it's very
the gameplay
fast
is and I
frantic.
Love it.
Yeah. Okay. You will love Devil May Cry. Okay. Well, now I'm going to do a game that shaped you currently today. Okay. So you played some of the more recent. So tell me
what was your favorite
more.
Assassin's Creed?
I think the first one.
Really?
Yeah, I think so, because I stopped playing at, oh my God, I don't want to spoil anyone for Assassin's Creed.
Did you play the entire Ezio run?
I think so.
Because the first one, there is no Ezio, it's just Altair.
Oh no, Ezio then is my...
Assassin's Creed 2.
Yep, that one was my favorite. One was my favorite.
That was Brotherhood. Which
I've
is
never
the,
played Brotherhood.
It's still in the Ezio storyline.
Yeah, I think...
Because they did Altair, then they did Ezio, then they gave Ezio like a trilogy.
Yeah.
And then they did
that's it.
Assassin's Creed
What's her
Retribution,
name?
I think it's called, or something along those lines. Yeah. And it's Altair meeting Ezio.
Interesting. There's a character that dies in, and I'm not going to name it, so nobody panic mm-hmm. if you don't want spoilers, but there's a character that was in that passes away. And I saw that bit. So whatever game that was in, that was the last one that I played.
Sure.
And I just like wasn't a fan of how that was executed and whatnot. And I was like, well, you had so much potential.
The non-ancestry
like
storyline is kind of dull.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I played 3, which mm-hmm. introduced the next person after Ezio. And I was like, this is garbage.
Yeah. Okay.
And I haven't touched another one since.
Oh, okay.
So you've made a good decision.
Okay.
Although I've heard some of the better, the more recent ones are
pretty good.
But they're not even like regular Assassin's
just
Creed
like,
games anymore.
There was just so much in Assassin's Creed, at least the first and the second that I remember. And Ezio coming in and just, I don't know, it was... They just did something real good and unique, I feel like, when those games came out.
And I love... This is... Kind of
like
unrelated,
a superhero, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it scratches that superhero itch for you, at least.
This is kind of unrelated, but mm-hmm. it's the fact that I've got to meet and interview the voices of so many of those people now.
So that's
like,
exciting.
The voice of Ezio is Roger Craig Smith.
Mm. I don't know who that is.
He also voiced Batman in Arkham Origins.
Cool.
He does Sonic and like the Sonic cartoons and all that mm-hmm. stuff now. Great voice actor. Nolan North from the Uncharted series.
Yep.
I've talked to him several times. Troy Baker.
Yep.
Oh, and the, those other games too, the Infamous games.
Yeah.
Infamous was great.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of when I said Just Cause.
Oh,
I was
okay.
thinking Infamous because Infamous and Prototype came out at the same time and they were very similar.
Yes.
And I remember there was like a war between the two. Mm-hmm. And that was when I started my guys, you can like both.
Yeah.
Whole like that
and
I went
did.
On, like,
I liked both of them.
You can love
I
both
never
of
played
them.
Prototype
guys.
2, but Infamous 1 and 2 were both very good.
Yeah, I don't. I think I played Prototype 2 either.
Yeah.
Though I heard it was good and I'm pretty sure I own it. I'm a psycho. Like I would get things and then with the intent on playing them and never play them. So I have a huge library. See those two cases?
Yeah.
One of them's movies, one of them's games.
When I had disposable income, I was buying all the like collector's editions of stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I have the Infamous
backpack
and it has a Sly Cooper patch on it and stuff.
Nice.
And I have a Cole McGrath statue. I have a
Alex
Nathan
Mercer?
Drake.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I have a Nathan Drake statue.
Oh, cool.
And I have it came with a treasure chest for like Uncharted 2. And you open it up and it had that statue. It has the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the Drake ring.
That is very cool.
And his belt buckle.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I think we've never talked about this before, but since this is an episode about you and things that have shaped you, when I went to visit Rob for the first time, going into his office was a special treat because he's got...
The stuff you don't see on stream.
Yeah, the stuff you don't see on stream is very cool. So he's got his like TV and his console set up and everything, but then he also has this like library of collectibles almost. You know, you've got your movies in their alphabetical order, mm-hmm. but then you've got like entire series and sections on this huge bookshelf. And then you've got action figures lining up the top. Yep. You've got your masks from your pro wrestling yep. and everything. And yeah.
And then the Wall of Fame.
Yeah. And then the Wall of Fame, which is very cool. It's on the opposite wall and it's photographs and they're all autographed from people that he's interviewed, which on his show, the yeah. Geek Generation, his podcast. Which changed my life.
Podcasts that shaped you.
Yeah, podcasts that shaped you. Exactly. So yeah, that's very cool. I think that's neat that you have those collectibles. Because I remember going in and thinking like, oh, I don't have anything like that. Like I have memories from these things, but I didn't really keep collectibles. Mm. Mostly because when I moved to Canada, a lot of the stuff that I did own that I put away in saving got damaged.
Yeah.
So it was like I couldn't go back and get those things that I kept. So unless I brought it with me, it didn't come. So
I'm in a constant war between wanting to downsize and being a collector.
Yeah. I feel like, yes, I understand this because we just went through one of our closets full of all of our old games and things, which you... Those listening who follow me on Twitter may or may not have seen, I did a thread of all the old shit that we had. We had manuals of old games. We have the Dream. We have like almost every system, the Nintendo, Dreamcast, like all the way up through. And, you know, we decided we wanted stuff we wanted to keep, but we don't want to leave it in the closet anymore. So we want to pull it out and maybe put some of these things on display in a collector's type fashion, which I think is very cool. But it allowed me to go through and go, okay, well, I don't need this manual for MechWarrior, but I would like to keep maybe this console or this like mech that I have, which
it took me a long time before I was like, I don't need the box for Full Throttle anymore.
Holy cow.
I can get rid of that now.
So that's what we did. We had four boxes because we have, between the two of us, have kept every single games box that we've ever had. Mm-hmm. So we also have dupes of a lot of things, which was crazy. But it, again, going through, I was able to see, oh man, I have the original black label of the Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, and those, I love those. So absolutely, we're going to keep those and put those on display because those shaped me, right, as a person.
Yep.
So yeah, I think it's cool. I also struggle with the downsizing and the collecting, but I'll get there eventually. I'll figure out my sweet spot.
I know. Why does my version of Full Throttle that I had, like I have the remastered version on Steam.
Yeah,
I don't need to hold on to my CD-ROM of the game that I played originally, but I have to.
Do you think some of that stems from the fact that we just grew up in a generation where when you bought a game, you owned it, you had a physical copy?
Because absolutely.
I remember when Steam first came out, I was like, absolutely not. Like, what if something ever happens to Steam? I lose my entire library.
Yes.
Everything that I've ever purchased is just like throwing money out the window. And then I kind of started to see the appeal of having a digital library because I don't want to have that like physical clutter.
I still prefer... Like, I still will buy my movies. I don't buy my movies digital. I still like having, I like the seeing the packaging.
Film.
I mean, you've seen my room.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like having
like
that looking
physical.
Back at me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like
it
too.
Out of space.
Yeah, I like it too. But I think what I've learned to do, or at least kind of how I feel I'm moving towards grabbing that for films that I want to go back, that move me or touch me, or I feel like, wow, this was absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. So I basically only want my favorites of the favorites to be up on display and everything else I can buy digitally.
I think I'm getting to that point.
Yeah, because I also take pride in my digital media library now, mm-hmm. where it's like, cool, because especially because like Plex, you can just boot it up and be like, here's my entire library, which has the same feeling as like looking at it on the wall.
It does, yeah.
But if you open that little cabinet right there, I'm pointing to my media cabinet because he's in my living room. There's like my favorites, like Blu-rays and things, especially things that you might not be able to necessarily get on meet digital purchase or anything like that. So these are mostly Blu-rays that I want to be able to put out. Or if I have it on DVD, it's because it doesn't exist on Blu-ray, right, but I still love it very much. Yep. Like the original Witchblade series.
Oh,
I have that.
Wow.
The TV show. Yeah. Wow. It was so
I forgot
good.
That was a TV show.
I know, but it was really great.
That's crazy. And there are a couple DVD cases that I have that like are just so great that I would never want that in pure digital. Like I have the 2009 Star Trek movie.
Yeah, of course.
But it's the Enterprise and the disc is inside the saucer section of
Shut
the
up.
Enterprise.
That's amazing. Like, yeah, of course.
Like I can't get rid of that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we could get rid of those things, but we don't want to.
Right?
Yeah, but we don't want to. So tell me about some other video games. That was a beautiful tangent. I loved every second of it, but tell me about some more video games that maybe come to mind that you feel like shaped you.
I'm trying to think of things a little more recently too.
Yeah, because I know you start. Because I know Tacoma. Because we did a talk on that one. But I know that you started really opening up to those indie narrative walking simulator-ish type games too. And
the
those
more
surprised
access
you.
I got to them, the more I played them. I do enjoy a good walking sim, and Gone Home was the first one.
Yep, I remember
that I played of those, and that was totally different. And like any game I'd played before, because I didn't feel like I was necessarily playing it as much as I was an active participant in this story that was unfolding. And so it felt like a movie to me, and it didn't pull me out and say, hey, you're playing a video game every two seconds.
I cannot wait until you play Detroit.
Oh,
I feel
so
like
excited.
You're going to love it. Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Because it is very cinematic.
It is in my, I have a few games coming up that I'm going to be playing.
Like what?
I'm going to be playing through, I'm finishing up Kingdom Hearts 2 right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to be playing Horizon Zero Dawn.
Bump it.
Which, yeah.
Put Detroit up. So I shouldn't say that.
Well, this is in no particular order.
Yeah. Okay. No particular order.
So we have Horizon Zero
Literally
Dawn coming
Detroit.
Up. Detroit is coming up soon. And I have like a backlog of just like so many freaking games.
Yeah, I do
But
too.
I'm also doing an on-stream playthrough of the new game plus for Spider-Man.
Oh, of course you are.
That is the game I played recently off-stream that you gifted to me so generously. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I played that by myself off stream and was like, I forgot that I love video games.
Yeah, like I forgot.
Like the narrative and the gameplay, it's one of my favorite games ever.
So I've heard this.
Yeah.
And I have a guest for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But I haven't played it yet. And I really admire this guest, this girl that I've asked to come on and play it. And I considered asking you to come on and let me be the fly on the wall and listen to this conversation between you and her, because
100%.
I am not so passionate about Spider-Man itself. Yeah. And I feel like I would do a disservice being not able to be like, I want to ask questions. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you guys some things, but I also want more than anything. I would love to hear two people passionate about it talk about how amazing it is.
There are two games that have ever brought me to a point of tears. One being Life is Strange Beyond the Storm, the bonus episode.
Yes.
The bonus episode crushed me. I knew it was coming and it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man.
All right. I've heard. So that's what she said in her tweet. She was like, I think she was like, this has like moved me more than I thought it would.
Yeah.
And I went, I didn't know you were playing games. Because she's actually, I met her at the NASA.
Oh.
So she's a NASA nerd.
Okay.
And so then to find out that she really loves video games and really loved this, I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
I would love for you to come on and talk to me
so
about
many
video
good things
games.
Going on in that.
I know.
See, why haven't you been interested in playing that? Is it just because you don't care about Spider-Man or?
Yeah, probably. I shouldn't say I don't care about Spider-Man. I was a Batman girl and I never really was allowed to like really explore my love for comics, I feel like. When I was younger. So I read like X-Men and I read Batman and that was about it. And my sister was really obsessed with Sonic. So we read a lot of Sonic, but comics were expensive and you just like jump in and out and around. So I'd borrow some from my friends and things like that. But yeah, I kind of fell out of comics and more into film than later. But yeah, it's just, I know it's a time commitment and I just haven't gotten around to
That's
it yet.
True.
And it's not typically a game that I would play on stream only because it's like AAA.
Okay.
And I usually shy away from that.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So I maybe will eventually get around to it, especially because people have said the story is really good and it's made them.
And the gameplay is
emotional.
Amazing too.
So, yeah.
And this isn't like
photo
mode
is great.
Oh, the photo mode is so cool.
So I watched Mr. B play some of it because he played it here on the big TV and whatnot. And I watched him do photo mode and it was incredible. But
and they've even put new things in, like they improved photo mode. They were like, we're not done. We added new functionality and stuff.
All right. I'll definitely add it to my list, especially because everyone's so emotional.
It's also
about
it's not like, so a lot of people don't like Spider-Man as they're getting older because they're like, oh, it's high school kid, like drama, blah, blah, blah.
I actually like that.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a Spider-Man that's 8 years into being Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's just starting off.
Yeah. I should clarify. It's not that I necessarily I don't dislike Spider-Man. I actually really enjoy the idea of somebody struggling to come to terms with something they didn't ask for mm-hmm. and this like incredible crushing responsibility.
And he's constantly doubting yes. whether or not he should be doing this at all.
Yes. Yeah. And I appreciate that aspect. Also, Spider-Man is Mr. B's favorite superhero.
Oh.
So I am like open to learning more about Spider-Man. Also, so over the years that I've learned more, it's not that I ever disliked him. I just was never really exposed to sure. him as a superhero. So as I learned that, is it Gwen Stacy that gets killed?
In yes.
Yeah. Okay. So when I found that out, that was the first comic to really like have such a crazy thing happen. So for those of you listening, in this comic, he tries to save this girl and he like sends out a web and grabs her in the web to save her life, mm-hmm. but he actually snaps her neck and kills her.
In the movie.
In the comics, that happens.
She dies. Oh, is it?
Yeah. So that was like one of the most iconic things in the comic, if I'm not mistaken. Guys, comment, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that that's what happens in the comic as well. And everybody was shocked when it happened. So when I found that little thing out, I was like, ooh, interesting. Like I would like to explore more of
it's also
Spider-Man.
It's prominent too, because it's one of the comic book deaths that has stuck.
Yes.
Like they haven't just brought her back. Like we have Spider-Gwen, which yeah. is a whole like an alternate universe type thing.
Yeah.
But they weren't just like, oh, we're going to reverse that. Like so many comic book deaths too. Yeah. Like Gwen Stacy's still dead.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Just let that hang for a second. Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like that's something that made me go, oh, that's interesting. I'd like to check that out. Also, I just love the tragic hero. I love mm-hmm. that so very much.
Oh, same.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Batman. Yeah. So I will probably give it a shot, add it to my list and bump it up higher. If you're playing Detroit, I might as well play Spider-Man.
I mean, I was planning on Detroit one way or the other. That's true. I love David Cage's games. I know you do too.
I do too.
I played
Heavy Rain. I really shouldn't say that because I got Heavy Rain and I played a little bit of it, but I never got around to finishing it because I was super busy at the time. But Beyond Two Souls is one of my favorite games of all time.
Heavy Rain's one that I've always wanted to replay.
Yeah, that's what I think I want to do too. At this point,
like I wanted to do an immediate replay.
Yeah. And I never
now
did
I feel like
Prophecy either.
I wonder if I replayed Heavy Rain now, not remembering my original choices, would I make the same choices?
Isn't
I wouldn't even know if I did or not.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't remember if those are my. I might play
so
a second time and be
intriguing.
Like, that was a completely new playthrough.
Yeah. And it could have been the exact same. I love that, actually. And I do appreciate the way Twitch is capturing that for mm-hmm. us so that in 5 years when we're a different person, we can go back and play something and see if our choices change.
Yeah.
I love that about the games now, the choice aspect of gaming.
I hate watching my old streams.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think I've ever watched me do anything. I think, okay, so that's not entirely true. I have seen there are some bits of Detroit that have become crazy infamous in my community mm-hmm. because I did an ugly Claire Danes cry, as mm-hmm. we call it, and made the strangest noise when something, you know, happened on the screen, and we're not going to even talk about it. But yeah, so yeah, and I've seen little bits and pieces, but I've not really gone back to watch me play again because I find my voice annoying. So I'm doing a podcast. But I think everybody finds their voice not so great. So
I'm fine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, of course. Well, you have the voice of God, so that's fine. You know, no big deal. Yeah. Okay. So is there anything else that comes to mind as something that's shaped you?
I'm sure there'll be a thousand things as soon as we stop recording.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are like the most prominent things by far.
I hope that cat sneeze just got on the recording.
I hope so too.
Yeah. It was really powerful.
It was well done.
It was very well done. Who was that? Did you see
that? Atlas.
It was Atlas. Bless you, Atlas. I love this that you're in my living room and you get to hear the cat sneezes as well.
Oh, the cats are my buddies now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've been sleeping on him. They love him so much, licking his jeans. It's great. It's great. So thank you for being my first in-person guest.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, my sister, Sister Mary, came to record. We did a three-hour talk.
First released in person.
We did a three-hour discussion on Suikoden 2, which is one of my favorite games of all time. And I wish so much that it... Maybe if I just did a transcript, I feel like I should just release that to the patrons or something, because it was absolutely incredible. But we had echoing audio issues. It just made it unreleasable. So yeah, but then you're my first guest to like sit down with me in person and talk and do a thing.
First repeat guest, first in-person guest.
Yes, but it's actually perfect because you're the reason why I started this podcast. So
yeah.
Aww. Yeah. Oh, feelings. Okay. Well, thank you. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Oh, right.
And so, all the things.
Yeah. On Twitter, you can find me. My personal account is at the Rob Logan.
Yeah. I love that you giggle when you say the Rob Logan. It's perfect.
It's so funny.
That's right. It is the Rob Logan, folks.
Yeah. Or at Geek Generation on Twitter. If you go to thegeekgeneration.com, you can see everything that we do over there, which includes our podcasts, both the Geek Generation, Random Movie Club. More to be added.
Stay tuned.
And that's probably the best things. And then twitch.tv/thegeekgeneration.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Go check out the Geek Generation podcast. I am on a couple of episodes.
You are. Even more than a couple at this point.
At this point, I'm on quite a few. You could also go to, I believe you can go to thegeekgeneration.com. And is it appearances where you can see what you've been in? On mine?
Yeah, I'm actually working on expanding that so that there'll just be pictures of every guest that we've had on. You can click on it and just see like all their appearances.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
Yeah. So I have a list for Rob's episodes because he comes on a lot and people are curious as to our crossovers. So you can go to pumpkinberry.tv/TheRobLogan.
Really?
Yes, you absolutely can.
Wow.
And you can find out everything that he's been on for us and everything that we've been on or I've been on for him. So
that's awesome.
Go check it out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Wait. We got to try this now.
Oh, all right. We're fading. Okay.
We're trying this live.
Doing it live.
So yeah, we just like keep talking, right?
Right. And then we just fade up the music as we're talking.
Oh my God. It's so perfect.
Okay. For real. Bye.
The Deep Dive podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.